Let's go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle.
I want to go odd. 5-51 mirror.
This is Patriots Playbook.
Go stack guts combat. Odd. 51 mirror.
Patriots Playbook. Breaking down last Sunday's game.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the 7 route.
Next Sunday's game.
Be ready for the grapes check, too, okay? Because we'll get the bunch on 3rd and short.
Even 51 grapes. Even 51 grapes.
And the rest of the NFL season.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast read over the top.
And some of the fun stuff in between. Now, here's John Rook on Patriots Playbook.
Come on, let's go, let's go.
Welcome inside the playbook. It is Tuesday. It is week 3 of the National Football League season. Have you recovered from your football hangover on Sunday? More importantly, I guess, have you recovered from undoubtedly what was a disappointing day to be a Patriots fan on Sunday? I guess we picked a heck of a day then to basically nitpick, didn't we? Nitpick Tuesday is the normal way of going about things on Tuesdays here inside the playbook. So, honestly, I don't even know where to start. There are so many different things that we can probably get into, which undoubtedly we probably all will.
Oh, we're all tangled up here. Hold on. Why are we all tangled up here? Oh, gosh.
Fred is as unkempt, I think, as an individual as I've probably ever seen. Okay, there
Fred
we go.
Leaving the studio a mess for
yeah,
you, John.
Just, you know, I mean, my goodness gracious. All right, here we go. There we go. Now we're back in shape here. Apologies. Well, you know, I've got certainly some things that I'm going to share with you. Obviously, some of it is going to be, I think, things that have been discussed over the course of the last 24 to 48 hours since the rather disappointing, shall we say, 28-14 loss on Sunday. I could sit here and I could say I told you so. I did pick this one, right, Kev?
Affirmative.
Yes,
we're each 1-1 now.
Yeah, we're each 1-1. It's just not like exactly the 1-1 I want it to be, I'll be honest with you. I'd much rather have the win over the divisional opponent. Nevertheless, from a Patriots perspective, nevertheless, I never felt good about this game last week, and obviously, for obvious reasons, you saw why. So let's kind of start like this. First of all, webradio@patriots.com is the email address. That's how you get a hold of us here in the program. 508-543-7482. 508-543-7482. The Ace Ticket Hotline now? Yes, I like it. I like it. We're big time now. This is the Ace Ticket Hotline. So you want to call the Ace Ticket Hotline, 508-543-7482, with your thoughts on the game. Here's what I'm thinking. Here's what I'm thinking. We're never going to be, and I say we, this is the collective we, all right? I don't mean, pretend to say that I play the game, all right? But this team is never going to be as good, nor is it ever going to be as bad as you think it will be this season. Now, I realize that's sort of a generalized opinion. 2 weeks into the regular season, we probably don't have enough season, really, to make that kind of a statement on the team yet. But Fred wrote about it in this week's PFW, for those of you that haven't had a chance to see the magazine yet. Yeah. But he's actually pretty much spot on where that's concerned. So that's why I think this year, amongst many of the others that we've had in the past, some successful, others not so, this year's the year where we just can't afford to be too high off of wins or get too low off of losses. So, yes, this was a loss, but I don't think anybody should be too terribly down about it. Why? Because I still think this team is going to be competitive this season. I know, I picked against them this week. But you want my opinion every week as to who I think will win that particular game in that particular matchup. That's why you tune into us to get our opinions on this. And might I say, welcome to Pete Shepard, who will be along from 4 to 6 p.m. Eastern time, former WEEI host, I've known Pete for a number of years, another Rhode Islander in the studio here on Tuesdays with you for his program. Pete, as many of you who listen to local sports talk radio here in the New England area.
They're going to really be jacked up for this game.
Yeah, he's a passionate Patriots fan. Always has been, probably always will be. And we're very happy to bring him into the Patriots.com radio family for Tuesdays. from 4 to 6 p.m., and he'll have his show and see if we can't bring him in here for a little early work again in the second hour of the program today.
Good news out of Orlando, Florida.
That was the Dale Earnhardt died story, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. Oh, Lord. For those of you that have listened to Patriots Monday and Patriots Friday in the past, you probably heard him on the WEEI programming as a part of those shows here on Patriots.com radio in the past as well.
Joe Hijimi.
See, we're already nailing him. He doesn't realize he's getting ready. It's going from bad to worse here. Because nobody is sacred. Nobody. That's exactly right. Nobody's sacred in the confines of Gillette Stadium. All right, so here's the thing. I don't think anybody should, like I said, get too down on this team, even though it's very clear we have deficiencies on the defensive side of the ball. Now, a couple of weeks ago, for those that may not be aware, I started banging on Darius Butler. I sort of compared it to banging on Lawrence Maroney for the previous 4 years that he was here, and obviously the Patriots just sent Maroney packing a week ago. I'm not advocating that they send Darius Butler packing just yet. I didn't think they should send Maroney packing. I'll be honest. He had 1 year left on the deal. I wanted to see him play out this deal. But in the offseason, if he didn't have significant contributions made this year, it was time for the Patriots to part ways. They parted ways with him earlier, actually, than I thought they would. Butler is a second-year pro. Devin McCourty, his running mate now at cornerback, is a rookie. So you're painfully young, and even to an extent thin, at the cornerback spot, which is one of the premier positions on the entire football field. You know, everybody says that offense revolves around the corner, the quarterback. Defense, in my opinion, revolves around as good as your cornerbacks are.
You can make an argument that it's the toughest position.
I think it is the toughest position to play on the football field, period. Quarterback probably would be considered the toughest because you've got to play calls, you've got to direct, you've got to lead, you've got to do a lot of things. But cornerback is probably, athletically speaking, the most difficult position to play on a football field. And yet you've got two of the youngest guys. I think that they both have talent. I think we've already seen that with McCourty. I even think Butler has talent. But the problem is, I don't think that Butler is as far along talent-wise as McCourty is. And Butler's been a pro for a year. I'm not entirely certain what the Patriots saw in Darius Butler when they drafted him out of UConn. That's not a slight to UConn. That's really not even a slight to Butler. I'm making a statement here based on, okay, what we see now, what did you see in him that you thought he could do? Well, we thought he could cover. Well, clearly he can't. Well, we thought he could be physical. Well, clearly he's not. Well, clearly, we thought he could play smart. Well, he obviously didn't do that either this last weekend. I was just as frustrated as you were with the poor play in the secondary. The poor play in the secondary, again, let's keep in mind here, the poor play in the secondary gets exacerbated. I hope that word isn't over anybody's head, because sometimes it's over my head. It only gets worse with the fact that you don't have an existing pass rush. You could make up so much in the secondary if you've got an effective pass rush. The Patriots had zero. Okay, not zero. Gerard Warren had a couple of sacks. And frankly, I was pleasantly surprised with that because I don't think we expect that from him. But, you know, I don't know what they're thinking defensively. I mean, do I think Rob Ninkovich is a good player? Yeah, I think he's an okay player. Is he an edge rush guy? No. Jermaine Cunningham isn't that either yet. I don't know that they have that. Why didn't they, from a personal standpoint, why did not they pay more attention to that need? One of two things happened. Either A, they thought they had enough guys already that could play the position, or B, they're just dumb. And they're not evaluating properly. Now, which do you think it is?
It's a good question.
That's why I'm asking it.
Yeah.
And I mean, where did
we go
Patriots
wrong?
Brain trust go wrong? Where did they go wrong in your estimation? What move should they have made they didn't do?
We had a guy calling the earlier program harping on how they should have went out and made a larger effort organizationally to go get Julius Peppers because he may have helped solve
I said that a year
a lot
ago.
Of the secondary problems.
I said that last year.
Yeah, he's a great player. He was dominant the other day.
I sat right here and spoke with Eric Scalavino almost ad nauseum. We must have mentioned it at least 6 or 7 times,
yeah.
6 or 7 weeks last year, saying, you want to solve these problems, pay the money to Julius Peppers and bring him in.
It's a good argument.
I think it's a great argument.
I can't argue against it.
It's a great argument. The problem with that is that they didn't want to bring Julius Peppers in because they would have to pay him the money.
And what they're trying to do is, you know, at a discounted price, try to draft that talent and cultivate it themselves. Like, I understand what they're trying to do. It's just not happening as quickly as we all would like it.
Nope.
I mean, Cunningham didn't get a whole lot of action, I don't think, on the field the other day, but he did make one play. Paul and I were speaking about it earlier. On the end around, they ran to Cotchery, and he stayed at home and mm-hmm. tackled him for like a yard gain, two-yard
mm-hmm.
gain.
Mm-hmm.
So that was kind of the one bright spot I noticed from the outside linebacking position because there wasn't a whole lot. And like you said with Butler, John, the most frustrating thing is watching a man be, what, an arm's length away from the receiver and just not being able to make a play on the
no,
ball.
No, it was almost as if he knew the ball was coming.
Exactly.
He knew the play was coming his way, and he froze. He
That's
just
exactly
froze.
What it looked like.
And when he didn't freeze, he committed pass interference or got burned badly.
It's just so frustrating. You see it, and you're screaming at your television, or you're screaming at the players if you're the coaching staff to make a play on the ball. And it's not like he's in a bad position to make the play. He just doesn't do it. Like, what's registering in your brain?
That's why, to me, in that instance, if a young guy freezes like that indicates to me that he's got too much gobbledygook in his head, okay? Patriots have filled him with enough crap where nothing is sinking in. So you probably need to go back to the basics and simplify. And again, with cornerback, as you already explained, Kevin, cornerback being perhaps one of the most difficult positions to play on the football field, and I think most would agree.
Yeah.
But you can't really oversimplify and be effective. It's one thing to say, just go out and play football. And another thing to know, all right, where our receivers' tendencies are coming, you know, what you have to do, what your responsibilities are in a cover two or a Tampa two defense, or when you're playing cover three, or when you're playing man-to-man, or when you're in a zone read, or maybe you're zone blitzing. Or I mean, you got a lot of different things that you have to think of back there. The Patriots have filled his mind full of these things where he can't do squat.
Yeah, I agree.
And this is something that they should have known when they tested him over a year ago, before they drafted him, you know, the Wunderlich and things like that, his tendencies to be able to react when things are piled upon you and you're under pressure. That's part of what the Wunderlich does. It's part of what your interviews with teams before the draft occurs. That's part of what teams are supposed to try to figure out. So either the Patriots didn't do a good enough job of evaluation on him, or they did a very poor job of evaluation on him. It's one or the other.
We had Brandon Merriweather on the air,
yep,
over Patriots.com radio,
right,
on WEI.
Right.
And I'm sure you might have heard the interview, but he was asked specifically about Darius Butler.
Yeah.
And it was a really good point made by Dale Arnold about, do you think his confidence is shaken? And especially with those taunting penalties from Braylon Edwards, do you think that got in his head? And Merriweather said that Butler was one of the most confident players he had seen, that he didn't need any pumping up, that, you know, he was going to keep his head above water. I don't know if I buy that, because that's not what we're seeing on the field.
I didn't see that as well when Edwards got a second touchdown pass, and
but it's interesting.
Butler turned around and took a swipe at him, which he said after the game he didn't remember doing.
Oh, he
but
did.
He did. He clearly,
clear as day.
He clearly swiped
clear
at
as
him.
Day.
So he was frustrated.
So it was getting to him.
It got to him. It
yeah.
got to him. Edwards got to him.
Exactly.
Them, the Jets picking on him got to him.
But it,
so I don't buy any of the calm, cool, and collected
stuff. I just
thought
it was interesting that Merriweather, like, it's hard to tell if he's coming out and giving an honest answer or he's just trying to back his playing made up, you know?
He's trying to back. He's got his teammates back.
Yeah.
You do the same thing.
Yeah.
You do the same
I'd
thing
I'd get
for
your
me.
Back.
You got my back here.
Yeah.
Right?
Vice versa.
I got it's yours.
Good.
Absolutely. We're a team here.
But
all
I thought
right?
it was a real good question posed by Dale just to try to see,
yeah,
like,
no,
the mental state of a young player.
Legitimate question. And, you know, and I'm sure that you know, Brandon probably answered it as best as he possibly could without throwing his teammate under the bus, which you don't do. So, you know, again, this isn't going to be a bang fest on Darius Butler because, as Bill is wont to say, it is what it is. This is what we've got. Now, you know, you have a couple other guys that can potentially play at those positions in the defensive backfield. Remember them? You know, Will Height.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean.
Shows you how big the loss of Lee Bodden was.
Yeah.
Illustration A.
Yeah, huge.
Sunday.
It was huge. You know, you can play Kyle Arrington back there if you had to, even though he's a special teams guy.
He was back there for a couple plays.
Yeah, I know.
What a boneheaded play.
Wheatley's still hurt, right? Didn't they put him on the IR, right?
Yeah, he's hurt. I'm not sure if he's on IR. But
no, he's not on IR.
What a boneheaded play Arrington made by running into the
That was a bad play.
Running into the return at the 5-yard line.
Yeah, you would have had the team. God. You would have had him back down, and then you pulled him out to the 20-yard line. And that was just a bonehead play. It was a bad play. And you know, special teams can't afford to make boneheaded plays because special teams are only on the field for four or five occasions.
Yeah, and it's exacerbated by tight games on the road. You just can't make that play.
Can't make those mistakes. The Patriots made unpatriot-like mistakes. All right, so let me get away from Butler for a moment because that wasn't the only problem. And again, I'm kind of nitpicking on Butler. By the way, again, nitpick Tuesday, so share your nitpick with me. What have we not talked about that resonated with you in a negative sense during Sunday's game against the Jets? Webradio@patriots.com. You can also chat us up on Facebook as well. Find my Facebook page, John Rook. If you're not a friend already, send the friend request. I'll take care of that. And then we can chat through Facebook, and you can send your questions through Facebook as well. I'll get to a couple of my other nitpicks, but I guess I'll share with you my biggest nitpick for the entire game. My biggest nitpick wasn't Darius, although he has to be one. I guess my biggest nitpick had to do with the fact that knowing that this defense was not going to be successful, especially early on in the season, why the offense strayed from what they were doing successfully in the first half. I don't have an answer for that. I talked about this right at the tail end of PFW in progress today with the guys. You know, there's no real definitive reason. I don't think the Jets made a whole lot of changes other than they didn't blitz as much. So maybe they left more guys in coverage. That's fine, but don't the Patriots have an answer for that? They didn't adjust to the Jets' adjustments. In fact, you could make a case that, you know, I realize that they probably played soft on purpose in the second half against Cincinnati in the opener, but this football team has been outscored now. What is it now? 39-10 in the second half of games this year? That's embarrassing. Good football teams put the pedal to the metal. Poor football teams suck wind at the end. And in that regard, you have to put the Patriots close to where the Buffalo Bills are right now. I mean, because the Bills are just pathetic all the way around, but, you know, why did they get away? Why were the play calls the way they were? And if Bill O'Brien is the de facto offensive coordinator, why did they change the play calls? Where was Welker? Where were the tight ends? It made no sense at all. Made worse by the fact that you have no running game to speak of again. Now, again, the Jets have probably one of the two or three best defensive units without Chris Jenkins even, okay, which they didn't have, obviously, on Sunday. But even without Jenkins, they're still probably one of the two or three top defenses in the league. So the Jets have a good defense. Make no mistake about it. What disappointed me the most is the Patriots didn't take advantage of their matchups, particularly in the second half. That's number one. And number two, obviously the Patriots' defense should have been good enough to slow the Jets' offense down. But the Jets' offense, well, they made Mark Sanchez look like an all-pro player. I'm sorry, Mark Sanchez isn't all that good. He had time to throw, way too much time to throw. Patriots' linebackers looked lost, and the defensive backs were clueless. That is a recipe for absolute unmitigated disaster.
Against any quarterback.
Well, can you imagine what'll happen against...
Imagine Peyton Manning. Oh,
Peyton
God.
Manning, Brett Favre. How about Aaron Rodgers of Green Bay?
It'd be like a video game.
It's just, yeah. I mean, opposing quarterbacks should light up now and their eyes get as big as cup saucers when they see the Patriots' defense on film, seeing the opportunities they're going to have, unless something happens schematically or personnel-wise to change things quickly. And I just don't know what that will be. Can Darius Butler become an overnight sensation? No. Can he improve? Well, yeah, we hope so. He's going to have to.
There's not much further to go down.
You can't go any further really down because you just had one of the worst offenses in the NFL light you up for 28 points, 18 of it coming in the second half.
And they did, in the second half, they did whatever they wanted. They moved the ball at will.
Sure. I mean, I don't even know where else to go.
I don't think any of us, regardless of whether you picked the Jets or the Patriots in Sunday's game, I don't think anybody in their right mind could have, you know, foreseen the Jets putting together that sort of offensive performance. I couldn't have.
Nobody.
I think most people who picked either the Jets, you know, regardless of who you picked, most people thought the game would be in the teens or the low 20s. But to see the Jets almost hang 30 on them is unacceptable.
That was a little bit embarrassing, to be quite honest with you.
For a team that scored 9 points at home in the first week, it's like, good God.
Yeah, a little bit embarrassing.
You more than triple the point output in 1 week. Less than a week, because they were coming off a Monday night game.
Yeah, absolutely correct. It was frustrating on many different counts. And obviously we're all somewhat more disappointed for it here on Tuesday. The Patriots as a team yesterday, when meeting with the media, they're off, obviously, today. This is their day off during the week, and they'll begin practicing in earnest for preparations for the Bills starting tomorrow. To a man yesterday, they all said they were ready to turn the page. That was the overwhelming – that was the phrase of the day, turn the page, turn the page. We're going to focus on the Bills. Can't do anything about the Jets game. We got the Jets later in December. We're going to try to focus. We'll keep this one in our memory banks. We won't forget about it. We got to turn the page and worry about next week. Okay, that's great. So we'll turn the page. Now, I'm also going to turn the page back, though, a couple of extra weeks because, quite frankly, I think we all talked about on the opening week of the season, looking at the four opening games, right? Let's just try to put a little bit of perspective on what this weekend's game meant. The opening week of the season, we talked about how tough a road this was to start the year. Versus Bengals, at Jets, versus Bills, at Dolphins. So you have all three of your divisional opponents in the first 4 weeks, two of them on the road. You opened up against a Cincinnati team that's a preseason favorite in the AFC North. Weren't sure where your wins were going to come from. And I think most people realize that 1-3 was a distinct possibility before the Patriots got to the bye week in week 5. A little bit of an early bye week this year, week 5. But as you look at it, when you count the preseason, it really comes right about in the middle part of the year. Counting the preseason, counting training camp starting, week 5 is about the middle part of the year. Close. So we said in week 1 that if the Patriots could find a way to get to 2-2 on the bye week, that the Patriots should be thankful that all cards were still on the table in terms of chances in the AFC East and potential chances in the playoffs. There was enough of the season left where the team could continue to improve, and barring any injuries to really key personnel, we're talking, you know, Brady and Wilfork and Mayo, Moss, Welker, a few like that, that this team still had the entire season in front of it would still be a factor, certainly within the AFC East. Nothing, in spite of what has happened this past weekend, nothing has changed from that initial scenario. Nothing's changed. If you'd looked at the schedule opening week, you'd looked at the first 4 games, I think the overwhelming majority of us would have had this down as a loss anyway. The Jets game as a loss. Why? Because it was a road game, primarily. It was a loss. But expectations were overinflated because of the performance against Cincinnati on offense. The way they came out and put pedal to the metal in the opening half and just basically blew their doors off, 31-3 lead before letting up and coasting in at 38-24. So our expectations, your expectations were inflated. Ours, the media, expectations inflated. So that's why I got back to what I said at the top of the program today. This team is never as good or never as bad as you think they're going to be this year. It's just not going to be. It's always going to be somewhere closer to the middle. I don't know that this team is an elite team in the NFL. Right now, it's not. We thought it could be after week one, but they showed their true colors, I believe, this last week. That's unfortunate. Does it mean that they'll stay this way? No. You hope that they can improve. You hope that they figured out, well, you know, remember what happened against the Jets. So offensively speaking, they'll learn how to adjust and continue to play well. And they're going to be involved, like I said, in potentially some 38-31, 35-31, 38-34 shootouts. They're going to have to win some games by literally outscoring the others. That was what should have happened this past Sunday. Defense is in trouble. We got to change our way of thinking on offense. Offense, got to step up and help our guys on the other side of the ball. Let's start winging it. Let's start moving the ball. Even if it's dink and dunk, which was working great in the first half. Walker for six, Walker for seven. Falk for six, Falk for seven. Hernandez broke a couple of plays. That's what you need. Hell, I'd rather dink and dunk to Welker than give the football off to Fred Taylor or Benjarvis Green-Ellis. You're going to get more yardage out of it and a chance to break one any even further. Utilize the short pass to set up the run. Didn't we do that a couple of years ago? I believe we did. Do what you know how to do best. Why, oh why, did they get away from that in the second half of the game? If the Jets didn't really make any changes schematically, what the hell difference? What were they doing? Less blitzing was the only obvious thing that I think I picked up. Okay, so that leaves more men in the box, more men in coverage. How do you attack more players in coverage? You try to go over the top. Or you run sideline routes. You run posts. Try to hit the tight end over the... there are many different ways that you can do it. Run the football, that's a novel idea. What do you do? You'd think that you'd have better chance. Now, did Cromartie have a good game? Yes, he did. Patriots still should have been on find a way to capitalize on Revis's absence, especially with what we saw, that unbelievable catch that Moss made against Revis in the second quarter. That one-handed grab for the touchdown was a spectacular play as we may see all year. Hope not, but it might have been. Why did we get away from that? That's a question that I guess I don't know that will ever be answered sufficiently. So I'd love to have your thoughts. I'd love to have your nitpicks here on the program. Webradio@patriots.com, 508-543-7482, the telephone number. Facebook, chat us as well here on the program. We'll share some emails. I've got some notes to pass along from the game. I've also got some key points around the NFL on week two that Russell Baxter has shared with us that I want to share with you. And we'll get to all of that coming up inside the playbook.
Tuesday through Thursday, hear from NFL experts on Patriots Playbook.
I'm pleased to be joined on the program now by Jim Nance from CBS Sports, the senior editor for NFL.com. Vic Carucci, welcome onto the program. Ron Jaworski, Phil Simms from CBS, joining us here inside the playbook. Kenny Albert, who of course calls the play-by-play for the Fox Television Network.
All right, we're pleased to be joined now by Dan Dierdorf, CBS analyst.
Randy Cross joins us here inside the playbook.
Patriots Playbook with John Rook, Tuesday through Thursday at 2 on American Airlines Patriots.com. Radio.
Hey, don't go yet, sir.
But the light turned green.
Well, you don't go till I say so. You play by my rules. My rules. Ball start, loss of 5 yards, still first down.
What are you talking about?
Unsportsmanlike conduct, 10 yards.
Unsportsmanlike is 15 yards.
Move the chains.
You are a crossing guard.
Personal foul, 15 yards.
And stop blowing that whistle.
Think football? Bank football. Get Patriots banking only from Bank of America. Get the Patriots logo on your checks, debit card, and your Patriots Extra Points credit card. Use Extra Points rewards to get tickets or even stand on the sidelines during pregame warm-ups. Plus, you get a bonus match on your Keep the Change savings. To get Patriots banking, go to a banking center or bankofamerica.com/patriots.
Delay of game,
but,
5 yards,
but I,
first down.
But you're not...
Keep the change, patent pending. Credit card programs are issued and administered by FIA Card Services N.A., Bank of America, N.A., member FDIC, copyright 2009, Bank of America Corporation.
So, Pat, what time does our flight get in?
It says here American Airlines Flight 505 gets in at 7:05.
Perfect. Game starts at 7:30. I suppose you know our gate number, too?
Yep. It says so right here on my phone, Brian.
Yeah, you think you know everything because you have one of those smartphones.
What's wrong? You're jealous because I can check AA.com, get flight info, gates and times, pretty much anything flight-related?
I like to keep it simple. You know, that's how I roll. I'm old school. So I travel with one of these.
Brian, that's a cordless phone.
Right. No cord.
From your home.
That's right.
How's that working out for you?
To be honest, the range is somewhat limited. But only when I travel.
Find all the flight info you need for the big game or the big meeting at aa.com/mobile. We know why you fly. We're American Airlines.
Hey, Brian, it's Dad. I heard you won Patriot season tickets for life. Maybe we could grab a game together.
Who's this again?
It's Dad.
What kind of joke is this? You're not my dad.
No, I'm pretty sure I'm your dad.
Yeah, third one today. Okay. Dad, tell me, when's my birthday?
Oh, come on, Bri. You won Patriot season tickets for life. You want to talk about your birthday?
I'm hanging up.
Don't hang up on your father.
Oh, yeah. They'll be coming out of the woodwork once they find out you won season tickets for life on a New England Patriots instant game. You could also win $1 million instantly, plus a boatload of other great prizes.
I could do one of those quick adoptions. We could go to the game together and talk about the old days.
We don't have old days.
Good point.
Bye, Daddy.
Pick up the new Patriots instant game from the Mass State Lottery, masslottery.com.
Welcome back inside the playbook on Tuesday, Nitpick Tuesday here on Patriots Playbook and Patriots.com radio. I'm John Rook. I guess I probably hit on the biggest nitpick of all, the fact that they lost. The fact that I'm disappointed that the offense didn't keep up with the game plan, clearly, in the second half of the game. My other nitpick sort of got lost in the shuffle here, I guess, with the overall disappointment over the loss. But my other nitpick is with Steven Gostkowski. 1-for-4 kicking field goals on the season.
I was actually going to mention to you, too, before we went into break, while we're on the special teams unit, we kind of have to eat what we said about the Zoltan. Because he looked pretty good.
Zoltan was, he actually kicked the ball very well.
He uncorked a couple bombs.
He uncorked a couple of beauties.
So we have to back off him a little bit and shift our focus towards Steve.
Here's the thing, though, with Mesko. He's a rookie, so he's going to run hot and cold.
Yeah.
And again, I think you have to expect that from most first-year players. They're going to be streaky. You hope that they develop some consistency by, you know, midway through the latter part of the season.
But compared to what we were seeing in most of the training camp sessions, he really struggled directionally. He was hitting a lot of shanks out of bounds.
Well,
the preseason was poor. His one punt in the Cincinnati game was poor.
Yep.
To see him kind of step up, you know, on the big stage against the big opponent on corks and bombs was a little bit, it was kind of refreshing.
Yeah,
it was. But Gostkowski, I mean, what's going on? He was on 98.5 this morning, and they were actually kind of teasing him, saying, you know, it's the curse. Ever since you started coming on the last few weeks speaking with us, everything has gone downhill.
Right. So.
Do you think it's a mental, like a golf, isn't it kind of like a golfer? You got to find that swing of the leg instead. I mean, is kicking more of a mental thing? Do you kind of get the yips when you start going south?
You know, I think that kickers in a lot of ways probably do have to have that rhythm like golfers do. And that when they do get the yips, they probably have to go back and break it down a little bit. I've heard that from some kickers in the past.
And do you think it's a valid excuse? You know, the one kick he did miss, he had to kick over again because they had the delay of game penalty, which was atrocious, by the way. Awful game management. So do you think having, you know, you go out there, you do your job, you kick the field goal, and then all of a sudden it's like, wait a minute. So when you compare it to golf, it's like, okay, you sink a 6 or an 8 foot putt for par.
Right.
And then your buddy comes over, pulls the ball out of the hole, and goes, no, that didn't count. I didn't see it. You have to do it again.
Right.
It's the same type of thing. Do you agree?
Yeah, I think to an extent.
Yeah.
I think so. I'm not trying
to make excuses for the guy, but it's definitely it's not a regular thing to have to do, to have to come out and kick a field goal again like that.
By the way, I'm not getting any of the web radio emails. I am
fantastic. You're getting my emails?
Yeah.
Oh, that's great.
So I'm not so sure why I'm not getting web radio emails here.
I'll have to make a phone call.
Is there another account that I need to be logged into here? Because I was told there were a ton of emails, and now I'm getting business emails, and I don't want to read your private business emails in here. So should I let you deal with that? Sorry. Might as well bring that up, huh? Let me share with you a couple of things as well that came about from games this weekend. First of all, I like to always try to – well, I call this Nitpick Tuesday. I like to try to balance things out as best as possible. I think we're all left with an overwhelming feeling of disappointment as far as the game on Sunday, but there were a couple of things that happened on Sunday that are probably caught in between the lines, so to speak, and going to go unnoticed unless we bring them up here. And by the way, all of them are fair game for discussion, if you like. So here's the scoop. Randy Moss, as you probably are aware, scored his 150th overall touchdown, just the fourth player in NFL history to reach 150 touchdowns. There was that 34-yarder he caught with one hand. From Brady in the second quarter that beat Darrell Revis. 150 overall touchdowns, fourth in history behind Jerry Rice, Emmitt Smith, and LaDainian Tomlinson. By the way, LaDainian Tomlinson must have drank from the fountain of youth, because I thought he was spent and washed up, and the Patriots defense found a way to make him look really good, didn't they? That might be another nitpick that I have to kind of harp on a little bit all of a sudden. So... Aaron Hernandez had six catches for 101 yards in the game. First 100-yard receiving game by a New England tight end. And technically, he's listed as a tight end, even though on a couple of occasions, I saw specifically him line up out wide. He was split out, not as a normal tight end, as a wide receiver. But technically, first 100-yard receiving game for a New England tight end since Ben Watson had 107 back in 2007 against Cleveland. Hernandez, 46-yard reception from Brady in the second quarter. His second 40-plus-yard reception of the season. Wes Welker, six or more catches in 28 of his last 32 games played, after getting six against the Jets on Sunday. So that gives him now 14 for the season. He's extended his streak to 65 straight regular season games with at least one reception. He's caught at least one in each of his 51 games with the Patriots, including three in the postseason. He scored a 6-yard touchdown pass from Brady in the second quarter. It's his third touchdown in his first 11 catches of the year. So three TDs in his first 11 receptions on the season. Julian Edelman made his debut. Third wide receiver. Returned some punts. Looked fairly good. Looked pretty solid. Lined up a tailback once, I believe, in the ballgame. It was a play that, whatever it was, Brady audibled out of. But I'm pretty sure I saw him line up a tailback on one snap in the football game. Brady in the game is now 29th all-time in career NFL passing. He passed Steve Air McNair with a reception to Sammy Morris in the fourth quarter. He also entered the game 20th on the all-time list in the NFL with touchdown passes. So he's got 230 career touchdown passes. He's two behind Steve Young for 19th place all-time in NFL history. All right. There are some of the superlatives that actually transpired on Sunday that largely, I think, went unnoticed, but I figured I might as well bring up here because I don't know when the heck else we'd ever bring them up. You know? I mean, it wasn't all horrible. I ask, and again, I'm going to repeat it here, we have to kind of take things with a grain of salt. This year is going to be a work in progress because this team is not going to be as good as you think it is, nor is it going to be as bad as you think they might be. The answer is going to be somewhere in the middle. We just don't know if it's going to lean toward the good or lean toward the bad. We're just not sure of that at this stage of the game. So that's what we're trying to figure out here. All right, now we got some emails here for you. This one comes from our friend Alejandro, who says, "Hello, John. The game played out like you predicted on Thursday." Yes. Unfortunately, Alejandro, it did. "The Jets simply wanted it more and out-hustled the Patriots. Plenty to nitpick, like some signs reminded me of last season. No points scored in the second half. Inability to put things away. My question to you is, do you trust your kicker in a critical situation? And did the Patriots get out-coached on Sunday?" Wow, Alejandro. I got to admit, right now, since I told you what my other nitpick was in addition to the offense not staying with the with the game plan in the second half, my other nitpick was Steven Gostkowski, now 1-for-4 in field goals. And so right now, I'd have to say, no, I don't trust him. Whereas last year, I think we considered him automatic. It just, quite frankly, has escaped him for the time being. And even Steven himself said after the game, there are some things that I got to go back and make sure I look at and work on and address. And I hope he does it quickly, because if this team is in any close games this year, they're going to need him. And if the Patriots get it, see, I can make an argument too. The Patriots kick that field goal that he missed. If they get that successful in the first half and they're up 17-10 at halftime, see, I think that puts a little bit more of mental pressure on the Jets being a touchdown down as opposed to being 4 points down. You just don't know how things can play out. But 1-for-4 has got to improve, and it's got to improve quickly. You just signed the guy to, a new contract in the offseason, extended him, and he's going to have to live up to that kind of dough. But right now, no, I'm afraid that next time he steps up, to kick the ball, if it's this Sunday against Buffalo, I think we're all going to have some doubts as to whether or not he can make it. And if he misses it, you'll begin to hear the groans. You'll probably hear a few boos.
And now, we were sort of cutting him some slack. The first week, we had a 54-yarder that he missed, and the second one was in the high 40s.
But this was a 37-yarder that he missed after an inexplicable 5-yard delay of game penalty. First of all, that may have been one of the stupidest things I've seen this team do in years.
That was terrible.
A delay of game penalty on a field goal kick? What is the problem?
It's just not being prepared is what it is. Not having the personnel grouping, knowing that it's third down.
That was horrific.
Fourth down, I need to be on the sideline.
Horrific. Horrific. There's no excuse for that. Even so, you only backed it up from 32 to 37.
Yeah,
37 still a chip shot.
Yeah, my general theory on this, John, you can give me yours too as we go along here, but when I look at a kicker like Gostkowski that was, a relatively high draft pick, he was a third round pick, if I recall, which is kind of a high pick to
very high for a kicker, yeah.
So then, you just resign him to a client. I consider him one of the elite, I hold him to an elite standard as one of the better kickers in the NFL. Like anything inside of 40 in good weather, I consider, cheap change.
You
like,
have to.
You have to make
as
that.
As a pro, as an NFL kicker?
I consider those gimmies almost.
They need to be. They need to be considered that.
So
I agree with that.
Okay.
Yes, I do. Totally agree with that. You might cut him a little bit of slack, Kev, if you have swirling wind conditions or rain or snow or something like that. You can cut him some slack. But, obviously the most famous field goal in Patriots history was kicked in a stinking snowstorm.
Yeah.
So
both of them.
Yeah. So I'm just saying, no excuse for missing 37 like that. None.
It was a little flashback on, the Sunday night game, too, seeing Adam back out on the field for the Colts making field goals.
Yeah.
Kind of just made us all kind of like wonder, what's going to happen with our kicking game now.
No doubt. Alejandro's second question is, did the Patriots get out coached on Sunday? Do I need to answer that question for you, or do you already know the answer to that? I mean, Alejandro, I'm asking you, and I'm asking everybody who's listening, do I need to answer that for you? I don't think anybody wants to admit it.
No.
But if you're honest, be honest with yourself. You know they were outcoached.
And you have a lot of listeners, John, very frustrated with the kind of coverage they play in terms of the cushion that they give on the outside.
I don't
just
disagree.
Just giving up 15-yard chunks for the sake of keeping the receiver in front of them.
I don't disagree with that.
And people are saying, listeners are frustrated and calling up and being like, why don't we play bump and run? Why don't we play press coverage? But I think the one thing I can say in the coaching staff's defense is that what we saw on Sunday, John, we don't have the personnel. We don't have the skilled quarterbacks that you have the confidence in that can go line up one-on-one and press coverage and cover a guy like a blank. I don't feel that way about any of our DBs.
Zero. That's exactly right.
So I mean, it's hard to argue that point, like, oh, you should bring them up and play even closer to the line of scrimmage when they're already getting beaten like a drum, as is.
Kyle writes, the Pats were pretty successful against Cincinnati using screenplays to Welker and others. Do you guys have any idea why they would shy away from those plays that they seem to have such good success on against the Jets? I believe I was asking that very same question.
No clue.
That's my chief nitpick with this team. Why did they go away from not only what was successful last week, but what was successful in the first half against the Jets?
It's those extended handoffs, and, you know, we call them screen passes, but really they're an extended handoff because a lot of the passes are caught behind the line. Then you have the no-excuse factor of Edelman's back in the lineup this week, you know, and Hernandez with the way he played. Hernandez is one of those guys too.
I'm one of those guys, Kevin, that you have to ride the hot hand until it's not hot anymore.
And he's one of those guys that I want to see split up catching those bubble screens because when he got in the
open field,
he was electrifying.
Yep.
He runs like a receiver.
I don't know why. I had real issues with the play calling. Just real issues. Steve in Connecticut. Don't get me wrong. There's plenty of blame to go around for this terrible loss. But against the Bengals, Tom had plenty of time to get up the line of scrimmage, look around, call out the protections, and snap the ball. Against the Jets, they were scrambling around, getting up the LOS with line of scrimmage with maybe 5 seconds on the play clock and snapping the ball. I would think Tom could use time to look over the defense. And when playing a team like the Jets, heck, isn't it an advantage to having a smart veteran quarterback like Brady, allowing him to read the defense and not having to rush up the line to get the small ball snapped? You know, I think I know where you're going with that, Steve. It didn't seem like on every snap, almost every snap the Patriots had, play clock was down to zero.
Yeah,
They
were running it. They were cutting it kind of tight.
Cutting it very close.
As evidenced by that stupid delay game penalty, too.
So, I would think, yes, I would. It's an issue either with the call or some indecision or Brady trying to check out of a particular play.
Yeah, and that's one of those things where, we're on the outside looking in. We don't know the communication that's going on in those heads. I mean, wouldn't we all love to?
Right.
But we don't know how it's being relayed, how many ears it has to go through before it gets to Tom or before it's approved. We don't know any of that stuff. So it's hard for us. I mean, you can play Monday morning armchair quarterback and say, well, why can't they get up to the line quicker? And we all would agree with that point.
Right.
But at the same time, we don't know the details or the information of how the actual play calling is called. That's one of the most sacred secrets the Patriots have. You know, John, when we think about, the lack of coordinators, the lack of naming. So we really don't know who's calling the play or who it's approved by, right, or if Bill gets the final say before it goes out to Tom. We have no idea about any of that stuff.
And unfortunately, that lack of information or that lack of knowing leads to a lot of conjecture, and it's going to lead to a lot of bad feelings. That's why some teams choose to be a little bit more of an open book than the Patriots do, because more and more people are going to begin to question why this team does the way they do. Nobody questions it when they're competing for Super Bowls.
Exactly.
But when they're not competing for Super Bowls and they're not competitive in competing for Super Bowls, people are going to question it. Well, this should change. And if you're going to stay the same way, then you're going to be open up for criticism.
Yep.
Matt says, whatever happened to Paige? Was he cut or is he hurt?
No, he played.
He played in the game.
We went through this with Perlow and the guys. He played a lot of special teams, and he was also in on their goal line defense.
Goal line defense. I saw that. I saw him in there at linebacker, actually playing, sort of almost a big nickel rover back type of linebacker position in the game.
So that answers that question.
Here's one from Paul who says, I was hoping to see the Patriots use all three tight ends this year. Are the tight ends not getting open? Well, not where Aaron Hernandez is concerned. Well, he was open most of the time, all day.
Gronk had a nice catch, and he had another ball that was poorly thrown by Brady.
Yes, Gronk had a step on the guy that if Brady lays it in there where he should have, Gronk probably scores.
And he had a nice
He had a good throw to Algie Crumpler that was also thrown behind Algie that Algie could not turn around, that you have to lay the blame on those two throws on Brady.
And in fairness, there are several formations and packages that the Patriots have run in the first 2 weeks with all three tight ends in the game at once. I saw a lot of formations on Sunday with Algie on one side, Gronk on the other for protection, and then Hernandez split out wide, which was a very interesting look. Because I can't really recall the Patriots having three skilled enough tight ends to put on the field at the same time.
Right. Derek, University of Arizona, says, what's up with Falk? What's the Falk up with Falk? I have heard rumblings his injury is serious. If it is, do the Pats have to bring in another running back or make a trade? No idea who you would bring in either way. Just curious on the thoughts. There's still no official word on Kevin Falk. I just think from the silence, it's not good.
Yeah, Bill was very close. They're tight-lipped about this morning.
Then it's not good.
Yeah, he said they, you know, we had only, you know, we've only been 48 hours removed for the game. So
then I would say it's not good. I mean, he wouldn't tell us anything one way or the other, but I just have a sneaky feeling that he'll be at least a few weeks. I just hope it's not more than that. And the play in which he hurt himself looked very innocuous. In fact, I don't even think there was contact. I think he probably just came down wrong. It was on a play when he landed out of bounds in the second half.
It's always the way it seems to go. But in terms of guys who could potentially take his place going forward, in going over the press transcript today, John, I noticed that several of the writers asked about Danny Woodhead, the guy most of you will know from Hard Knocks
right.
on HBO that played for the Jets.
Right.
He's a very competitive
right.
Division II school, you know, hard-nosed player. And he was one of those guys that they looked to sort of fill the same role as Kevin Falk did. He was a scat back, third-down receiver type back. And Bill was specifically asked about Woodhead today. And he said that he was a guy who played a very similar position to Falk. And he agreed that, you know, they had a lot of the same skill sets. So that could be a guy going forward that we could see activated off the
practice
squad.
Well, I would say that would probably, especially when they come to an official decision on Falk, probably we'll see it in the injury report tomorrow, which would be coming a little after 4 o'clock Eastern time.
Yeah.
Depending on Falk's status, you could probably see something moved in terms of a transaction bringing Woodhead onto the active roster.
I would say by dinner time tomorrow we will at least
probably
have a decent idea of what Kevin Falk is at least facing going forward with this injury.
Yep.
Just to interrupt you.
Yeah, go ahead.
Woodhead is kind of an intriguing little player, isn't he?
Well, you know, I want to see him. I want to see him in blue instead of green first.
Yeah.
But I mean, you know, if he can bring you some flexibility, then yes, I would agree with that.
And you know, Bill made a good point
because we're not going to ever be a team that's going to dominate by running the football.
No, that's not the way they're built.
No.
And Bill made a good point today that, you know, Woodhead came in and he signed the contract last Saturday after the team had already left and departed for New York. So this is really his first true week in camp. So he has a lot to catch up
on. So I doubt very seriously that he had a whole lot of input on breaking down the Jets' game plan.
No.
If you thought that they brought him in just to get the poop on the Jets, I don't think that was the case at all.
And in his defense, I can't really see him retaining too much information before the bye week.
I'd
say you got to give him at least 3 weeks to get into the swing of things.
Probably. Brett in Orlando, I'm so tired of hearing fans overreact to wins and losses. After the Week 1 win, fans praised them for a great offense and an okay defense. People were predicting 14-2. After Week 2, fans say the defense sucks and the offense is one-dimensional, predictable, unable to adjust. And some people are predicting 8-8. I think I'm liking this, Brett. The reality is it's one game, and it's only Game 2. This team will play better, and they will play worse. They will make adjustments like every other team does after a loss and be better next week. What does Jim Rome say? Racket! Brett, I think you hit that one on the nose, brother. That's what we opened up the show with today, and it's
dope!
Yeah, I think that's a pretty good one. That's a pretty good one. Taz sent along a note about Braylon Edwards, and for those of you that somehow missed this story, Jets receiver Braylon Edwards was arrested earlier today on charges of driving while intoxicated after officers pulled him over because his SUV had excessive tinting on its windows. Can you imagine?
I can't.
Pulled over because you have excessive tinting. You open up the windows under the car, and the guy just smells of alcohol.
Now my question would be, John, when we look back at the game on Sunday and that little dance he did in Darius Butler's face after he would catch the touchdown.
Because he was celebrating.
Do you think he did that after he got pulled over the other night?
Probably took a swig on the sidelines. How about that? West side of Manhattan, about 5:15 this morning. Given a breath test at the scene, was given another at the police station. His blood alcohol level was 0.16, which is twice the legal limit.
He had a few doubles.
Yeah. And there, get this now, 4 other people in the SUV at the time he was pulled over.
See, that's just a boneheaded play. You know, to endanger the lives of other innocent people is just not something you want to be doing.
By the way, in case you did not know this, there is something called the Player Protect Program, which provides a 24-hour driving service exclusively for pro athletes.
And that's what so many people are frustrated with, John. The general public are like, these guys go out and they make millions of dollars. How can they not afford a town car to come pick them up or a cab? And that's something that I think you and I is just, you know, struggling, trying to feed ourselves, sports media members can't relate to.
There's no excuse. You know, the NFL and the Jets, somebody, you know, they need to throw the book at him. There's no excuse. Now, I don't know if you consider this an offense along the lines of, you know, what happened with Roethlisberger earlier this year or not, but he can't go unscathed, otherwise this will continue to happen.
Yeah, this needs to be addressed. Especially, can you imagine, I haven't seen a lot of the headlines in the New York papers, but after the guy goes and has a great game, a breakout game, he goes and does something like this.
Well,
I can't imagine Rex is going to be too happy.
I can't imagine either, but then again, it's their problem and not the Patriots.
But I know exactly what'll cheer him up, though.
Okay,
let's go to eat a goddamn snack.
Yeah, there you go.
Maybe some peanut M&Ms.
Peanut M&Ms. Clearly, he should have had the snack, or at least a little bit more of a snack after he drank. Maybe the blood alcohol content wouldn't have been as high.
Beer mops, we call them.
Yes.
You know, peanuts, chips,
beer nuts,
things like that.
Beer nuts. Like a good beer nut. That's good. Yeah. All right. So anyway, that's the latest on Braylon Edwards of the Jets, in case you missed that. This one comes
maybe
from,
I just drink to get drunk.
Thank you, Eddie Mack. Warren says, he was talking about Cromartie. He's a bum. I don't rate this guy at all. Brady did seem to throw a couple of passes to Moss that didn't need to be thrown, and we didn't use Welker enough in the second half. You think? You think?
We're beating a dead horse now.
Yeah, I know. Bill sends this note. John, I'm only half kidding. But do not pick the Patriots again this year. Yeah, well, I didn't pick them in either game, and I went 1-1, so there you go.
It seems like everyone's 1-1 now.
He says, my nitpick is you jinxed them. Yes, I know, players play, coaches coach, and whatever you do is absolutely irrelevant. Tell that to all the guys with lucky socks and stuff. You need cover? Try reading a truncated version of this before regularly picking against the Patriots. When I picked against them, they won, but when I picked them, they lost. I do not want to jinx them. Thank you, Bill. I'll do the best that I can. I will try.
It is what it is.
Yeah, but it's exactly right. Thank you, Bill. Couldn't have said it any better myself. It is what it is. I'm only giving you what I really feel the team. If it's any indication, if it makes you feel any better, I mean, I know it's Tuesday, but I do already feel good about the Patriots' chances against the Bills this Sunday.
Yeah.
Even though I know I've picked against the Patriots twice now to open the season.
I think this might be your first. We're not going to go that far yet because it's not Thursday.
Oh, we got two more games to get through.
Yeah.
But I'm just saying, I'm already feeling good. And the reason I feel good about the game is because they were so horrible on Sunday. I think that the Patriots are going to have a little bit of their backs to the wall, knowing that it's a home game, it's a divisional opponent, and the Bills suck even worse than they do.
I think, you know, anybody who listened to Vince yesterday morning will get a good idea of how irritated the players were. And listen to Tom. Tom was very outspoken.
Very irritated.
He was.
And if you and by the way, if you didn't hear Vince or Tom, you know, it's on the archives. You can hear the Patriots Monday stuff, but it's probably worth it. I got that sense too, Kevin, that they were clearly irritated. That, you know, when they all talked about in the locker room yesterday how we're ready to, quote, turn the page, as I mentioned early in the program, and we'll see how well they turn it. But they all mentioned it to me, we're ready to turn the page, we're gonna move on, but we're not gonna forget what happened, because we know we gotta play the Jets again later this year. That's a good sign.
And when a big, mean, all-pro nose tackle comes in and starts an interview on a Monday with, I'm pissed, you know he means business.
You would think so.
And I mean, pushing that point even further, John, when you were watching, I know I was watching, you know, the post-game pressers after that game on Sunday, to see Brady, you know, just take field a question or two, and just, you know, Stacy stepped in and was just like, you know, a couple more questions, and to see Tom just kind of so flustered that he just didn't want to be there and just said thank you very much and walked off, you don't see that from Brady too much.
No, you don't. Let me get this one in from Sean here. Sean says, John, the defense looked much like the defense we saw in the last two preseason games. Yeah, I think that's pretty accurate, Sean. I feel that if we come off the bye week and the defense looks like they have made no progress, I think it's basically over. I'm not worried about the offense, but to require them to score 35 points a game to make it competitive is not fair. Well, I'm not going to quite buy into what you're saying later there, Sean, because I really think that with a bye week coming in week five this year of the regular season, I don't think the season will be over at that stage if they still are looking like they're looking now.
It's so ridiculous.
I think what you have to hope for, and I think realistically here, you know, is you have to hope for some signs of improvement by the midway point of the year, which is week eight, week nine. I think we can give them to week eight, week nine, defensively.
But having said that, they need to keep their heads above water and be 500.
There's no question. And as I look ahead, and I'm going to look ahead in the schedule, I'm going to violate one of my cardinal rules here, and I'm going to look ahead in the schedule for a minute, all right?
John, you and I have dissected the first four games because the bye week is...
Yeah, because the bye week is...
I think we came to somewhat of a general conclusion where if they just came out of this 2-2, they're at least still alive.
Well, yeah, and we did do that. We said that. And we said if they go 2-2 the first 4 weeks, we should be all be thankful. They're still very much alive. They're right in the thick of things. And I still believe that, and I think that's exactly where they're going
to
be.
And not to be, you know, overly optimistic, but they get the two tough interdivisional road games
out of the way
the quarter pole.
That's right. It just puts more pressure on you when you get those guys at home later in the year. But after the bye week, you have the Ravens at home, you go to the Chargers, and then you have the Vikings here, you go to the Browns, you go to the Steelers, and you have the Colts at home.
And let's not forget an Ed Reed-less Ravens that they still will be because he's through week six. He will not be on the
team.
Well,
I think the Ravens game, the Patriots have a decent shot because of what happened in the playoffs last year.
Yep.
A lot of guys are going to remember. I think they're going to take that personal, and, yep. I do feel like the Patriots should fare better in that game. I'm not ready to call a win just yet because a lot can happen over the next 4 weeks. But I'm just saying I think they'll be competitive there. At the Chargers, I'm going to win that one.
Okay.
Home against the Vikings, I'd say they have a shot.
They have a shot, especially the Vikings.
But now, see, we're already getting into 6-7. That's week eight. So the Vikings, when they come in on Halloween, that's week eight. That's the halfway point of the season. That's the week that we should know whether or not this defense is going to be able to be competitive or if it's really just not so this year.
And to face Adrian Peterson that week is...
Well, Adrian Peterson, and who knows, Favre might work himself out of his funk by then, too.
He'll probably have turned himself, at least turned a corner where because he looked off.
I think the Vikings game, gang, is the pivotal game. Not just because it's the halfway point of the regular season, but I think it's the pivotal game because that's usually when we get a pretty fair idea what kind of football team we have.
And it's on Halloween.
And I cannot wait to see the outfits of the Patriots cheerleaders on Halloween.
Yeah, I
they have been
that.
Absolutely smoking hot the last couple of years. And I anticipate the same again this year.
Hey, girl.
Yeah. Okay. Well, you got to dream about something, right? You got to think about something. You got to look at something positive here. All right.
I could always eat your salad.
You have all sorts of fun.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm not going to touch that one. I think it's probably best that we do that. All right. Let's pause here for a break, and then we'll come back and continue with emails. Webradio@patriots.com. If you'd like to join the show, the Ace Ticket Hotline, 508-543-7482. Facebook us as well. We'll get a little chat going on Facebook. I got a couple of those to share with you as well. Hour number two inside the playbook coming up.
Tuesday through Thursday, hear from NFL experts on Patriots Playbook.
We're pleased to be joined on the program now by Jim Nance from CBS Sports, the senior editor for NFL.com. Vic Carucci, welcome onto the program. Ron Jaworski, Phil Simms from CBS, joining us here inside the playbook. Kenny Albert, who of course calls the play-by-play for the Fox Television Network.
All right, we're pleased to be joined now by Dan Dierdorf, CBS analyst.
Randy Cross joins us here inside the playbook.
Patriots Playbook with John Rook, Tuesday through Thursday at 2 on American Airlines Patriots.com radio.
Hey, don't go yet, sir.
But the light turned green.
Well, you don't go till I say so. You play by my rules.
My rules?
Ball start, loss of 5 yards, still first down.
What are you talking about?
Unsportsmanlike conduct, 10 yards.
Unsportsmanlike is 15 yards.
Move the chains!
You are a crossing guard.
Personal foul, 15 yards.
And stop blowing that whistle.
Think football, bank football. Get Patriots banking only from Bank of America. Get the Patriots logo on your checks, debit card, and your Patriots Extra Points credit card. Use Extra Points rewards to get tickets or even stand on the sidelines during pregame warm-ups. Plus, you get a bonus match on your Keep the Change savings. To get Patriots banking, go to a banking center or bankofamerica.com/patriots.
Delay of game,
but,
5 yards,
but
first down.
But you're not...
Keep the change, patent pending. Credit card programs are issued and administered by FIA Card Services N.A., Bank of America N.A., member PIC, copyright 2009, Bank of America Corporation.
So, Pat, what time does our flight get in?
It says here American Airlines Flight 505 gets in at 7:05.
Perfect. Game starts at 7:30. I suppose you know our gate number, too?
Yep. It says so right here on my phone, Brian.
Yeah, you think you know everything because you have one of those smartphones.
What's wrong? You're jealous because I can check AA.com, get flight info, gates and times, pretty much anything flight-related?
I like to keep it simple. You know, that's how I roll. I'm old school. So I travel with one of these.
Brian, that's a cordless phone.
Right. No cord.
From your home.
That's right.
How's that working out for you?
To be honest, the range is somewhat limited. But only when I travel.
Find all the flight info you need for the big game or the big meeting at aa.com/mobile. We know why you fly. We're American Airlines.
Hey, Brian, it's Dad. I heard you won Patriot season tickets for life. Maybe we could grab a game together.
Who's this again?
It's Dad.
What kind of joke is this? You're not my dad.
No, I'm pretty sure I'm your dad.
Yeah, third one today. Okay. Dad, tell me, when's my birthday?
Oh, come on, Bri. You won Patriot season tickets for life. You want to talk about your birthday?
I'm hanging up.
Don't hang up on your father.
Oh, yeah. They'll be coming out of the woodwork once they find out you won season tickets for life on the New England Patriots instant game. You could also win $1 million instantly, plus a boatload of other great prizes.
I could do one of those quick adoptions. We could go to the game together, talk about the old days.
We don't have old days.
Good point.
Bye, Daddy.
Pick up the new Patriots instant game from the Mass State Lottery, masslottery.com.
I'd rather listen to Tom Petty. Kevin's telling me to go.
We'll keep it up for you for a little bit.
This is a good song. All right, fine. You want to listen to the stereo, you probably would be.
Actually,
already,
my
right?
First concert ever was Tom Petty.
No, seriously? Yeah. Where'd you see him?
Saw him at Comcast Center.
Nice.
I think I was like 19. So.
Nice.
This is a good first concert.
That's a very good first concert.
Dad was jealous.
One of my first concerts ever was the Eagles. It was the Hotel California tour back in the 70s. Yeah, yeah.
That's a good baptism.
Yeah, right? That was a good baptism, too. I know. I have never seen Tom Petty in concert. I can't believe that.
You should invest.
And I'm a huge Tom Petty fan. I was actually there like a week after he was inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in Cleveland because I went and saw the exhibit and everything that was there. And, you know, I've loved all of Tom Petty's music over the years. I was a huge fan of the Traveling Wilburys, you know, when they were existed too.
See, before. I was always poked fun of because I always liked kind of the and I was never really a huge fan of my generation's music.
Yeah. Oh, Kevin's got to answer the phone now. My friend Ian sent me a little Facebook note here, and it was a link to Boston ESPNBoston.com's Mike Reese, who's talking about the same old second half story on the road. You might have seen this in Mike's blog, but I'll share it with you anyway in case you haven't. It says, a familiar theme unfolded in the Patriots' 28-14 loss to the Jets. The team crumbling in the second half. The Patriots have been outscored 116-41 in the second half of their last 8 road games. That's a stat that does not include the team's win over the Buccaneers in London last season. Is that incredible? Wow. 116-41 in the second half of their last 8 road games, the Patriots have been outscored. That's not only incredible, that's embarrassing. You cannot tell me, as much as this team crunches numbers and you know, goes the extra mile to do their homework and break down tape and all that kind of stuff, that they did not know that. That's horrific is what that is. You've got to know that, you know, hey, teams are going to pick on us in the second half. How do we turn it around? Come on, fellas. Can we not focus on that? That should be the biggest nitpick I think that anybody has with this football team right now. The second half stinks. Ian also says, Hopefully when the Patriots play the Bills, they can get some practice at what they need most, playing 60 minutes and finishing a game as they have been vastly outscored by opponents in the second half of games lately, as that article suggested. Thank you, Ian. Good stuff as always. Steven also sends this via Facebook. It's a copycat league, and Butler's shortcomings are going to be exploited time and time again. Brady's accuracy was off against the Jets. I'm sure that won't continue. It's going to be, can we score more than you all season long? And then Keith sends this note as well via Facebook. It's hard to tell on just two games, but the resemblance to several games in each of the last few seasons is worrying. I'm actually more worried about the play calling during the game than I am about the players. We don't seem to be able to react on the fly when a team makes good adjustments, and it makes life hard for us. We have the appearance of having a plan first half and another for the second, and nothing. No third plan if the first two don't work. Guys, I'd have to say you're right on the money. I wish you weren't. Right now, I'd have to say you're right on the money. So, anyway, sharing via Facebook today. All right, back to some of the emails that we have. And this one comes from our friend John, who says, those who were convinced we were going to the Super Bowl after week one just got a reality check. Also, those same people thought the Jets would stink because they lost week one. When we win four in a row, I'll start getting excited. Who was calling the plays in the second half? Was it anyone who was actually at the game?
Hey, we don't actually know that. We can't say for sure.
Okay, I'm gonna breaking news here on Patriots Playbook. I called the plays in the second half from the comfort of my television room.
from your mom's basement.
From my fortress of solitude.
There you go. He's got the headset on down there.
I've got it on, baby.
In the man cave.
I got a pipeline. That's exactly right. I got a pipeline directly to the sideline. Okay, and I resign as offensive coordinator of the Patriots.
I resign.
As of today. John says, do you think the offensive problems were because of poor play calling or poor execution? The reason I ask is I want to know why Brady doesn't change the play if he sees how the D is lining up.
Well, in his defense, good question. This was brought up earlier, too, in PFW.
Okay.
We had a lot of guys, or a lot of people, we'll say, because we do have some female listeners,
mm-hmm.
that called in and tried to use Peyton Manning as an example of all the theatrics and the changing of the play and all that stuff, and asked why Brady didn't do that. But in Tom's defense, I did see him several times on Sunday go from a five-wide set with Kevin Flocker, one of the backs split out, changing the play, changing the protection, going under center, putting the running back in the backfield,
yes.
and audibling to a run. I did see that.
And one of the things we mentioned in the opening hour of the program today is the Patriots took the play clock right down to the limit.
Yep.
And it seemed like on almost every stinking snap of the ballgame, which also tells me that he's trying to make some adjustments while he's at the line or he's calling the play if they were in the no huddle.
Yep. And, I mean, there were a few times in that game that stuck out. I can't, rattle them off the top of my head, where it stuck out where he audibled from a five-wide set, under center, tailback in the backfield, to a running play that actually, picked up some decent yardage.
Mm-hmm.
There are several times in the game that happened that stuck out to me where I noticed, wow, well, he is making some changes. He is reading the defense. But let's not forget, too, John, I'm sure that stadium was rocking on Sunday. And for him to communicate all the way out to the, wide receivers.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the time you get to use hand signals.
Most of the time.
And, you got to signal three or four different people because with all these different packages, it's not extremely rare to have, four wide receivers, three wide receivers, two tight ends split mm-hmm. out wide.
Right.
So there's a lot of communication once you get up to the line, and all that communication eats up time, and it all contributes to that play clock getting whittled down.
George in Winnipeg says, my sources tell me Kevin Falk could be out for the year. Okay. Well, George, maybe you've got good sources. I don't know. He says, that leaves us very
thin. Kevin Falk, LSU.
That leaves us very thin at running back. I tried to convince Bill to keep Maroney a few weeks back in an email to no avail. You didn't return your email, George? Sorry to hear that. I'm not feeling good about our running back situation anymore. Has anybody felt good about our running back situation all year? No, of course not.
If Fred Taylor was 5 years younger, I'd feel good.
Yeah. But he's not.
No. And we don't even know what, you know, the health of Fred Taylor. We can only speculate because,
you know, why did he not play in the second half?
Yeah, that's what everyone's trying to want. Everyone's wondering that because he ran pretty
I can only guess that the thought process here is that they're trying to keep Fred's legs as fresh as they can because he has the wear and tear of, you know, 12, 13 NFL seasons on him.
Yeah, he
ran
effectively.
The only reason, because he did run effectively, yes. He had one big game that was called back by a penalty early in the ball game.
Yep, but let's not forget, that was an illegal formation. It wasn't like it was a hold that caused it.
Right.
I mean, he sprung that thing wide open.
He did. I can only guess that they decided that they want to try to keep him fresh. But you know,
Or it could be that turf toe again.
I don't know. I'm of the opinion that, you know, when somebody's running well, you got a hot hand, you play it.
I know, with the speculation with Falk and with Fred Taylor, tomorrow's injury report is one of the more anticipated ones of the early season here.
It could be big. It could be big for this team. I guess next April can't come quick enough. Anybody get a chance to see John Clay of Wisconsin this weekend? Or how about Mark Ingram back in apparently good shape at Alabama?
Wasn't Ingram's first rush like 48 yards?
Yeah. And then I had an emailer. Asked me last week, or it was a Facebooker, asked me last week about the kid Vereen from Cal.
Okay.
A little bit of a smaller tailback, but a lot of open speed. I liked the kid. Cal got whacked, but from what I saw, at least initially, I'm like, ooh, I'm going to have to watch this kid throughout the season. So I thank you for the tip on that one. Bill writes back, he says, John, I thought you picked against the Patriots versus Cincy and then picked them against the Jets.
Nope.
No, that was not me.
Incorrect.
I picked against the Patriots 2 weeks, so I'm 1-1.
By the way, John, I like that you actually let me give my pick, unlike Fred, who always cuts me off.
Well, Fred doesn't like to be shown up, so I don't know what to tell you. No, it's good. It's all, it's all conjecture anyway. I love to hear opinions. We wouldn't have a show here if we didn't rely on people's opinions.
We'd have no purpose.
No. I mean, we're here because we're here as an outlet for Patriots fans to give their opinions, to vent their frustrations, to sing their hosannas if they have any. Yeah. That's why we're here. And then taking all of this into consideration based on the football experience that I have in covering games and calling games and everything over the years that I've done, I try to add, you know, some of that experience in covering football to all of the emotions and to all of the factors and try to make some heads or tails out of it. So hopefully our Patriots fans can not only understand the game better, but maybe understand this team and the philosophy a little bit better.
And hopefully after a week like we just had on Sunday, we're somewhat therapeutic for all the listeners out there looking to vent.
Hey, I need it. I'm glad I have this outlet for my therapy because I was ready to throw things at the TV in the second half. You know? I got up and screamed at the television as loud as anybody. It was just me and my son. But I got up and I physically yelled at my television when Moss caught that pass to beat Revis. And I was yelling at Revis. Okay? So I'm just telling you, his hammy hurts now. Oh, you baby, get the hell out and don't come back.
We had a similar reaction with about, you know, seven guys in my apartment all screaming.
Well, see, and then I got just as mad as everybody else when things were falling apart in the second half.
Yep.
And then I just said, all right, I got to calm down. And so I calmed down, and I became more realistic with it, and I said,
keel, John.
Yeah,
long
even
season.
Keel. That's right. Long season, and frankly, I knew
and
that this team.
By the end of the game.
I knew that this team was not near as good as you had hoped it was.
And it's funny how by Sunday night, by the time, you know, when you're getting ready to hit the hay, if you can sleep after a game like that.
I was able to, because I was able to come down and rationalize
it.
Everything.
It's funny how you find yourself talking to yourself, and you're just like, man, do I sound like Bill? Trying to rationalize what happened and be like, okay, let's not get too high, get too low.
I don't get paid for doing what he does.
That's true.
So, I mean, I'd probably have trouble sleeping if I got paid that kind of dough.
But it's funny, you know, since I've started here,
maybe I wouldn't.
And you're when you're around him in the press conferences and you're listening to a lot of the stuff that he says to the media, it's funny because sometimes when you have fans come up to you and ask you your opinion, you almost kind of catch yourself sounding like him sometimes.
I know.
It's strange.
Well, it's because we kind of get indoctrinated with, you know, the Belichickian ways of the Patriots.
Yeah.
Warren, I often write into PFW, but this is my first time to you, so good afternoon first off. Warren, thank you for joining the program. Don't be a stranger. I honestly believe that the offense went away from the formula that got them the 14 points in the first half, and that was spreading the ball around, not trying to go for Moss when it wasn't necessary or when he wasn't even open. Just because Revis wasn't there doesn't mean Moss wasn't still going to have extra protection. Hernandez was doing great, but we ignored him in the second half. What about three tight ends and run a play and a run play or draw plays? We could have easily scored 28-plus over the Jets, had longer drives in the second half. Our O-line protected Brady pretty well all day. except for the one strip sack at the end. But I would have to say, yeah, you're right about that, Warren. Defense. Well, Butler reminds me of Hobbs. He's going to be the target for a while now. He has to get good fast. I think the Jets avoided McCourtney because they would have probably drafted him themselves if the Pats didn't. They know how talented he is. I don't believe in the Jets. Still, Sanchez is overrated. We should have blitzed more or even just shown blitz because I don't think he can read defenses that well yet. You know, that was the other thing I was thinking. You know, when you don't have some of the receivers that you know you're going to have later, why didn't the Patriots show a blitz or two, thinking that they had to put pressure on Sanchez to get him to get rid of the football early?
I felt like early in the game they brought some heat. Gerard Warren had some success getting after the quarterback, but in the second half he just had all day.
You've got to do something.
And I think it just
You've
got
to change it up. You can't just stand there and let Sanchez, of all people, Mark Stinking Sanchez, the Sanchez himself, pick you apart. That's embarrassing.
Yeah, I think it all stems, though, John, from that the lack of confidence in the secondary because they just don't want to.
Well, then, you know what? Let the see, this is where you got to be proactive. If it were me, it's not me, I know. But if it were me and I knew that I had trouble covering with my corners in the secondary, I'm playing a nickel, number one. I might even be playing a dime.
Okay.
All the time, number one. And number two, I'm going to send somebody on a blitz, and I'm going to tell him to use his athleticism, do whatever you can to get to the quarterback. But we're going to blitz him every flipping snap of the ball. Until it doesn't work.
Until they beat you on the long one.
Until they beat you in the long one.
Until he proves he can throw the long
one. We're going to make them prove that they can throw the long one.
Yeah.
That's all I'm saying.
I don't necessarily disagree with you.
That's all I'm saying. I'm making the son of a gun throw the ball, and I am on his, you know what, I'm on his butt every snap of the ball. I'm coming after you. I'm pinning my ears back. I'm blitzing.
That's the way the Jets play against a lot of teams.
But that's what they didn't do in the second half, and that was the difference in the ball game.
Yep.
They got away from playing Jets football, and the Patriots failed to adjust to it properly.
Mike Reese had several good observations on this game, one of them being looking back not only through this season, the second half of the Bengals and the Jets game, but all through last season at how the team couldn't make adjustments in the locker room.
That's right. Keith sent a long email. Keith, I will read most of it, but I'm going to go with your nitpicks here. Keith in Dallas sent this one. He says, here's for Nitpick Tuesday. Tom Brady forcing the ball to Moss unnecessarily with wide open receivers. I admit a couple of times over the top I think he did that. Number two, Tom Brady not getting Brandon Tate and Julian Edelman involved in the passing game. I agree with that one. And number three, offense was not complementary to the young defense. I agree with that one. Simply because the offense has to take it upon themselves and say, you know what, defense is getting burnt. We need to help Darius out here. We need to help, you know, McCourtney out here. We need to help Devin out. We need to help, you know, Ninkovich. We need to help the defensive line that can't put any pressure on the quarterback. We need to help these guys out. How do we best help these guys out? We hold on to the ball. We drive the ball like we did in the first quarter. How about in the first quarter? You had 104 yards to 5 net yards for the Jets in the first quarter, and you get no points out of it. None! That's an embarrassment because you missed the field goal. But you got a 104-5 advantage. The Jets had the football 3 snaps for the entire first quarter. You hold on to the ball, you get no points out of it. But the problem with that is that why did you get away from that game plan? Because the longer you keep the ball out of Sanchez's hands, or anybody else's hands for that matter, the less opportunity they have to do any damage with it. You got totally and completely away from the game plan.
We have some unfortunate news here.
Yes.
You see what my Twitter says on the screen here?
No. What does it say? Can't
read it. Got an anonymous tip from Brooklyn Matt, who alerted me to Twitter, and Shalice Manzi-Young is tweeting that an NFL source says Kevin Falk's injury is a torn ACL.
Well, Shalice Manzi-Young from the Boston Globe.
From the Globe, yep.
Yep. Formerly from the Providence Journal.
That is a big blow.
She's covered the Patriots now for, I think, at least the last 10 to 12 years for both papers. And so the tweet is this afternoon that she's reporting that another NFL source is saying that Kevin Falk is out for the year with an ACL tear. So that's coming from that tweet. And Brooklyn Matt, thanks for sending that in. If indeed that is the case, and we'll find out more tomorrow, again, it happened on a rather innocuous pass play. Really was not any contact on it. Not necessarily similar to what happened to Wes Welker. because Welker at least had a hard cut in that game on the turf against Houston last year. But this was on a play where he went for the ball out of bounds, I believe, and just came down on the ball or came down on his leg wrong on a pass that ended up sailing out of bounds. If I'm not mistaken, I think that was the play, because I remember he kind of went down to both knees on the sideline for a moment. And I also remember that there was a television timeout called so the Patriots trainers could come over and attend briefly to Kevin. He obviously never reappeared in the game, but if that is the case, I'm pretty sure that was the play in which he was hurt. That would be that's certainly going to be a blow to the Patriots, who probably now wish they still had Maroney. Good Lord. Sterling.
Can't really, I mean.
There's no real way to confirm that.
And it's hard to put, what I was going to say is it's hard to put, you know, and it's hard to give an accurate portrayal of how valuable Kevin Faulk is, because I think the average football fan doesn't understand that it's not just the catching and the running of the ball out of the backfield. It's he's so valuable giving up his body. He protects Tom Brady almost single-handedly on third downs.
He knows how
just gives up his body and gets blown up by linebackers.
He knows how to chip away at rushers.
So I think this has got to be a huge concern for Brady almost going forward too, because whoever takes his place as that third down back, are you going to have the confidence that he can pick up that blindside rusher?
Huge concern for this team if indeed it is the case. And we'll find out probably officially between now and maybe around this time tomorrow. Official injury report for the Buffalo game won't come out until after 4 o'clock Eastern time tomorrow afternoon. I'm sure that Bill Belichick will be asked about it tomorrow morning in his press conference here at Gillette. I'm quite certain you'll probably see some items in your local newspapers this morning, especially here in New England, about it in particular. It's really all conjecture until the team releases it officially, but again, that's according to a tweet that just came across a short while ago.
And Albert Breer is now tweeting it, too.
Albert Breer? Okay. Yeah. So,
it's being spreading.
It's being tweeted on a couple of different sources that Faulk is out for the year with an ACL tear. Let's see. Sterling sends this email. Stop the Brady Moss down the field madness. I'm getting sick and tired of looking at long-faced Brady, the long-faced Brady has in the sidelines. He has to realize he has the most potent offense in the NFL, more potent than 07. You have two tight ends to really stretch the defense. Let's get Edelman and Tate and or Price in the mix. All this Patriot value analysis paralysis is getting tired. They need to start developing these guys rather than do one or two plays and then keep them on the sidelines. If Brady is a leader, then develop your talent like Manning does. Okay. Darius Butler is a bust. We found that out against rookie Sam Bradford. Okay. Well, I don't know that I'm ready to call it. I started the bust train, or I started the beatdown train on Butler, you know, a couple of weeks ago, but I'm not ready to call him a bust. Lawrence Maroney was a bust in New England. Doesn't mean he's going to be a bust for his career, although you'd have to say that it's likely he won't be much more than what he was here. You know, Butler's only a second-year player. I think I'm willing to go a little bit longer on him. Let's just say that I don't like what I see. Maybe a few of you are coming around to that assessment as well, especially based on what happened Sunday. John sends a note, my nitpick is in advance for next Tuesday. Okay, I'll explain. After the pitiful performance on Sunday, I can see us coming out on fire against the Bills. At the end of the day, the score will be like 48-9, and the Pats will be criticized for running up the score. Thanks, John. I'd like to have those kind of problems.
Yeah, remember those days, John, when they used to, you know, back in 07 and 08 when they were just blowing the doors off people?
Yeah, and we used to get criticized for, you know, having the regulars in there, you know, like the colleges are. And I remember the argument was, well, you know what? This is a game of pros, okay? Pros are paid to play, and, you know, hey, you got to tackle them. It's not our fault.
My theory is all the guys in the Patriot offense had themselves in their fantasy leagues, and they just wanted to win.
You would think. That would be a smart thing to do. They should have that. Should pick themselves and put more pressure on them. All right, Jack. John, the only nitpick I have is the second half. Oh, my gosh, where to start? Lack of adjustments, lack of execution, lack of Wes Welker, the addition of Ray Charles as a play caller. Oh, that's harsh. Yeah, that's very harsh. A little late on the drum rip, but that's okay. Why wouldn't Tom change a few plays at the line? I think, Jack, that was part of the problem why you saw the play clock go down and why you saw very near delay of game penalties in some instances, because I think that's what he was trying to do. Obviously, it wasn't terribly successful, was it? All these great tight ends we have, did they take the second half off? By the way, from a non-technical point of view, why was there no retaliation on Smith for that hit on Welker? You know what? That's a good point. That's one thing that I really haven't addressed. Belichick addressed about it. Coach Belichick addressed it yesterday when Eric Smith took that cheap shot and brought his elbow up high and cold-cocked Wes Welker.
And Bill admitted that, you know, the officials got it right. They threw the flag. There was a foul. But when they showed him on the CBS cameras still kind of questioning the referee even after the flag was thrown, you're wondering if he was pushing for an ejection.
I kind of thought that he was pushing for the ejection at the time.
Because he did not look satisfied even after the flag was thrown.
No, he didn't. I will be surprised, however, if the NFL does not fine him.
I think you have to.
Well, he clearly went above the shoulders, which you're not supposed to do,
and
with
it,
his arms.
And it was after the ball had already cleared.
And the ball had already cleared. So I'm just saying that obviously is against all the rules that have been put into play. Flag was properly thrown, number one. But number two, there should be a fine coming thereafter. And I'm sure that was part of Coach Belichick's assessment on that.
I don't think there's many people, you know, arguing that that wasn't a dirty hit. It was a dirty hit.
It was an awful hit. Emery, I guess that's how we pronounce it, says, hi, I'm going to ask this. This is via Facebook. Says, why Wes Welker was not on the field in the second half? He got one ball in the second, killed by a missed block of Hernandez, and that's it. He was not on the field at key plays on third down, especially. I can't answer that question for you, to be honest with you. I don't know why he was not on the field. I can only surmise that that he just was not in the packages that were called offensively at that time. And, of course, what we've been wondering all day and over the last couple of days is, well, then why the hell were those packages being called when they clearly were not working, number one? And number two, wasn't anywhere close to what they had called in the first half? Now, maybe the Patriots were trying to adjust to what the Jets were bringing them, or not bringing them, because they weren't bringing as much pressure in the second half. But whatever it was, if the Patriots were adjusting, it didn't work. It wasn't working, and you must continue to adjust on the fly. See, you can't make adjustments just at halftime. You can't make adjustments just in the third quarter. You got to make adjustments throughout the entire game, and that is something that I don't think this staff does particularly well. I don't think they adjust on the fly as well as they used to when they had definitive roles. And I'm talking Charlie Weiss calling the offense, Romeo Crennel calling the defense, or Josh calling the offense as well. I'm just saying, sometimes coordinators are just that in name only, that it's still more of a collaborative effort. And that's really what the Patriots have done this year and even last year, was it was more of a collaborative effort calling the plays. But when you have too many Indians and not enough Chiefs,
exactly,
you know, calling the shots and willing to take the shots for calling those shots, that's when you get into trouble. And Belichick says, well, the ball stops with me.
Yep.
Well, Bill,
you can't shoulder all the blame.
You can't shoulder all of the blame. You must learn to delegate authority. Now, if it's because the Patriots have decided, well, we're not paying high numbers for coordinators when we can do the job, then this is a problem that the Patriots have fundamentally within the organization. You know, they don't want to pay for Julius Peppers. Okay, I can almost understand that, although I still think that's a poor choice.
Yep.
They don't want to pay for Richard Seymour, and they decide to get value for him. Okay, I still think that's a poor choice.
Yep.
But you got to have guys that can coach these guys up.
Yeah, and I mean, part of the problem, too, is, John, the guys you mentioned were great football coaches.
Oh, yeah.
They were great at what they did. And I don't think they have that coaching depth right now. And the analogy you made with the too many Indians, not enough Chiefs, I think, John, if that's almost rubbing off on the players from what I heard from Vince Wilfork and Brandon Merriweather yesterday morning. Brandon Merriweather came out and publicly said that he considered himself one of the guys that would inspire and fire up that defense. And he was asked the question, well, then how come you couldn't do it yesterday, meaning Sunday? And he said he felt like, and mind you, he said this on the radio, not behind closed doors or anything. He said this on the airwaves of WEI, that they had enough guys who were willing to take that responsibility, to take a leadership role, but they were all sitting around waiting for each other to do it. In other words, he used it as, he calls himself the party starter. And he said, we have party starters on this team, but mm-hmm. we were all sitting around waiting for somebody else to do it instead of doing it ourselves. And Vince Wilfork echoed that sentiment, And that's a serious cause for concern going forward if you're a Patriots fan. If you have guys that aren't willing to step up, and instead of waiting for their teammates, waiting for the all-pros to make a play, you know, that's not something that you want as a characteristic of your defense. Guys sitting around passing the buck, waiting for the next guy to hopefully bail you out.
Right.
And so I think that you can almost draw the parallel from the coaching staff to the players, and you can make the argument that whole, you know, too many Indians, not enough cheese, that's applicable to the players and the coaches, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think that's an issue. Kevin in Florida writes, it seemed that Brady locked onto Moss in the second half because Revis was out. The two interceptions looked like he was forcing those to Moss. What happened to the what he was doing in the first half, throwing to the open guy? Well, that seems to be the question of the day that we're all coming up with here, Kevin. Maybe they were trying to take advantage of Revis being out, but I think we all learned that the Jets are certainly capable, and Cromartie is also still capable, even without Revis's presence. Mensa in the Bronx writes, I think we should start holding the coach Bill Belichick accountable, but there is a saying that when a fish rots, it starts from the head. Is there a saying that says that? Okay. Belichick thinks he knows it all. Instead of drafting top-notch players, he keeps trading down and bringing second or sometimes third-tier players in.
It is what it is.
He refuses to hire the right coaches, contends that he can handle everything. You should stop.
Are you kidding me?
You should stop this nonsense by hiring coaches and bringing top-notch players by paying them.
Okay.
Well, he's not the one that signs the checks. I can tell you that, Mensa. I do not know what Bill saw in Darius Butler before drafting him. Well, Mensa, I'm there with you on that one.
That's so ridiculous.
I'm there with you on that one. Please let us be vocal and put pressure on Bill to bring in coordinators and good coaches. I think because of Bill Belichick's ego, it is difficult for others to get along with, let alone work with.
Okay. Am I really into solving the world's problems?
It's just like having Bill along with us, isn't it?
He is along with us. He thinks that the Emperor's not wearing any clothes today. Adam sends an email by saying, John, I totally agree with you in regards to you saying that you would stick with the hot hand. Why we didn't go back to Hernandez or Gronk more than once is beyond me. Make them stop you. If the throw down the seam to Gronk was on the money, that's a surefire 30-plus yards or even a touchdown, and obviously Hernandez is a great option. Brady looked like he was off the mark on several throws. I'll just attribute it to a bad day and know that he will bounce back.
Everyone sucks but me.
No, I think Tom had some. I think he had some help sucking on.
He's full of shit.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's also probably true. If the offense was able to stay on the field, then the Jets can't score 28. See, now that may be the statement of the day. Thank you, Adam. That may be the statement of the day. If the offense was able to stay on the field, then the Jets can't score 28. I think I said that a little bit earlier when I said, you know, you had time of possession and yardage possession, yardage lead 104-5 after the first quarter, and yet you're scoreless. I knew that they were in trouble when that happened.
Yeah, it was a great point. As much as I hate to say it, you know, Nance, as we closed out the first quarter on CBS, said, you know, the Patriots have dominated this quarter. And Phil Simms points and goes, hey, but what's the score?
What's the score?
And, I mean, it was a great point, as much as I hate to say it.
Very good point. Adam says, it's only week two, so I know there's a lot of room to grow. P.S. Now Braylon Edwards has plenty of time to do the Dougie and the clink. What a chump.
Oh, jeez. It wasn't a very good imitation of the Dougie, let's be honest.
No.
But I do agree, he has plenty of time to practice.
He should have time, because he's going to serve a suspension or something at the very least. He should, anyway. We'll find out. We'll find out. We'll find out what the Jets and the NFL are all about, I think, on this one. Marvin, Kernersville, North Carolina. John, my nitpick is the way we had all the momentum going into halftime with the Moss touchdown catch and just 53 seconds left in the half. What do? We just let them march right down the field, kick a field goal, and take the momentum right back. That's a good one, Marvin.
Great point. I was thinking that as I'm sitting, you know, playing armchair quarterback. I was like, oh, there's 3 points that you pretty much just gave them on a silver platter.
That's a real good one. I told the PFW guys earlier, sometimes it's not the size of the dog in the fight, but the size of the fight in the dog. It's one of my favorite cliches, by the way.
It's good.
This Patriot dog seems to have zero fight in them. Hence the nitpick. 53-second drive just before the half. Thanks for the great show, as always. Yeah. Yep. All of it.
That was a good one. I hadn't used that drop before.
That was very good. Very good. Not a whole lot of fight in the dog. And that Patriots dog, anyway.
I was worried that you and I were going to have to start singing Who Let the Dogs Out if I didn't have a drop there.
Okay. Frog from the Mud sends this. Frog from the Mud. I like that. I do not understand two things. A lot more, actually, but I will write about this, too. Number one, why Fred Taylor was not used when he had a fantastic run, though nullified. According to him, he didn't have any health issues. I kind of alluded to this a little bit earlier, but I don't think anybody knows the definitive answer there. The only thing I can tell you is that based on the abilities and or age of the Patriots running backs as a group, as a collective group, they probably did not have him in there. And I wondered it out loud during the game, too. But they probably didn't have him in there because they're trying to keep him fresh. That's all I can tell you. I don't like that.
You're damn Skippy.
I also don't think that it was necessary. I'm an advocate of, you know, running with the hot hand, playing the hot guy when he's got something clearly going, and yet they pull him out because they don't want to wear his legs out. Look, the guy's there to play football. You're paying him to play football. Play football. If he begs off or he needs some time off or he gets hurt, that's one thing. But if you're keeping him out because you think he needs a rest or you think his legs might give out on him, then you think incorrectly. And you're not thinking like a football coach should think. Just my opinion. Number two, Frog from the Mud says, Wes Walker was kept silent, not by the Jets, by the Patriots. The guy who killed the Jets last year, master of tough third down catches, was not on the field in the second half. I just do not get it.
Bam, I got it.
Well, you're going to have to join the club with that one, because I'm not sure any of us really get it, to be quite honest with you. Gordon in Des Moines, Iowa. John, I've been hearing varying reports about Brandon Jacobs wanting a trade. You think it would be a good move for the Patriots to trade for him? Yes.
That would be an interesting scenario, wouldn't it? Because he's the kind of back Bill loves.
I'll pick him up at the airport.
That north-south hit you in the mouth back.
I'll volunteer to pick him up at the airport. I will drive to the airport. All they have to do is say, John, Brandon Jacobs at the airport. Can you get him? Okay. Yes, I will pick him up.
Will you even have one of those little cards that says Mr. Jacobs?
Yes, I will do that. They want me to.
Put you in a little tuxedo?
I'm not wearing the tuxedo or the hat, but I will carry a card that says Mr. Jacobs.
Well, that's meeting him more than halfway.
Okay.
It's better than having him take the commuter rail down here.
Well, if Brandon Jacobs wants a trade, I'm not sure what the Giants would want in return. They probably would want at least a two.
We could have given him Maroney.
Well, you think the Jets, you think the Giants would actually do that?
No.
Nobody in the right stinking mind would do that. I mean, we got rid of him. We got rid of him to Denver for a fourth round pick. We had to throw in a sixth round pick with him.
Yeah, they would probably want picks. I think
they would want multiple picks.
Yeah, because there's nobody in the backfield that they would want in exchange. Mm-hmm. And to be honest, the Patriots really don't have enough talent to be dealing people that play.
Well, let's put this way, all right? If indeed the tweets that have come out since the show began today that Kevin Falk could be out for the year with an ACL tear, then if that is the case and you become that much thinner now, although Woodhead undoubtedly would get called off of the practice squad to replace him on the roster.
Yep. At least for the interim.
For the short term, I would say that, you know, if somebody is actually wanting a trade or if something like that is being discussed, then there will be some smoke. You'll see some smoke signs, some smoke signals somewhere. Do I think they should get him? Absolutely. He's the quintessential back. He's the big guy that they loved when they had,
Corey Dillon.
Thank you, Corey
Antoine
Dillon.
Antoine Smith in here. Another good example.
Right.
And I mean, John, having watched this team through training camp and been out there watching this team run goal line drills, they struggled, John. They struggled big time against their own defense, which isn't that good to begin with.
Yep.
But when you got in third and one, fourth and one, or third and one, or third and goal, fourth and goal from like even the 1 yard line, they would struggle. Even with LaVore in the backfield trying to, you know, plow the way at fullback, they could not get 3 feet to get the ball in the end zone. And I think Jacobs would be a good solution to that problem.
Sean says, John, you don't seriously think the Pats would pick a low first round premier running back, do you? We were talking about that earlier.
It's not their style.
Well, first of all, I don't think a premier running back would be available in a low first round. I think the two first round guys that seem to me to be would be Ingram and or Clay. I think those are the two guys from Alabama and Wisconsin, respectively. There may be some others that I'm just not aware of right at this point in time because April is pretty far off. But those are the two guys that, you know, with the Patriots holding two first-round picks next year, those are the two guys that have piqued my attention. I mean, how can you not have your attention piqued by a Heisman Trophy winner?
It was kind of a punch in the gut to see the Rams beat Oakland.
I'm watching Mark Ingram on the highlight reel right now. His running style is so similar to Emmitt Smith's. It's not even funny. Plus the fact that he wears 22.
Yep.
So I'm just saying, you know, I think that's the guy, and I think that's what you have to go after. If he's not available wherever you're picking, and goodness only knows where that'll be because Oakland is also now 1-1, damn it.
Curse it.
Yeah. You know, a guy like John Clay could also be a possibility, and I've always liked the way Clay runs. You haven't had a chance to see him play for Wisconsin, do so. Want to check out this kid Vereen from Cal a little bit more. I think DeMarco Murray from Oklahoma could also be a possibility, although I'm thinking he's probably more of a second-round pick type of guy than a first-round pick. You want a guy that can be certainly a franchise back, a guy that you can build an entire offense around as a first-round pick with either one of those first two-round picks that you have. I'm not sure that Murray's that kind of guy. He might be. Maybe this season will dictate that at some point. Maybe we'll see him develop like that at some point this year. But right now, I'm not so sure that he would be that. But he would be another name that you could also throw in there if you're looking for value or the Patriots decide not to go that way, not to go the running back way in the first round, which obviously I think we all probably think, nah, there's no way they'll pick a running back. No way in hell they'll pick a running back in the first round next April. And maybe indeed that's what they're thinking. That, you know, they have to pay Ingram too much money or they have to pay Clay too much money, but that, you know, for value, you know, with a second-round pick, we think that a guy like DeMarco Murray could still be there. Gordon, if this deal with, you know, these reports happen to have any truth to them at all about Brandon Jacobs wanting a trade away from New York, then that's something we should all be talking up. We absolutely should be talking that one up because I think that would be a great move, and I think fans would really rally around that and would most definitely get into a move like that. So I think we'd all be thrilled with that particular scenario. But, again, to have something like that of that magnitude happen during the course of the season, I just think that the Patriots have to give up too much. It really depends on what they have in the bank, so to speak, in terms of the stockpile of picks that they have. And you know that the Giants, in particular for a guy like Jacobs, would hold out for top picks. They'd want multiple picks. You could probably start with the two. They'd probably ask for one of the ones, and I certainly don't think that he should get that. But they'd certainly ask for a two. They'd probably ask for like a 2 and a 4. Would you give up a 2 and a 4 for a guy like Jacobs?
Tough choice.
I think you'd have to think about it. I think you'd at least have to consider it. Well, we got a lot of time to consider these thoughts between now and when that actually happens. I'm sure that the rumor mill is going to continue to run rampant. The guy sitting to my right now is probably going to do his best to feed the flame of that rumor mill and any other things that come on.
I don't do that
at all.
Logic and rationality and, you know, come on. I have no emotion.
You got to use a little bit of emotion, right?
I know. I tell you, didn't you have that feeling when Falk had? I said, you know what? Those are the injuries that don't look, you know, like they're going to be devastating. It always seemed to be the worst ones. I think you were just talking about it, but man, it was nothing.
It was nothing.
I have a bad feeling about this.
I know it was awful, ladies and gentlemen. For those that do not know this gentleman to my right, Pete Shepard is a brand new member of Patriots.com Radio.
Hello.
He's going to host the Pete Shepard Show from 4 to 6 p.m. Eastern Time every Tuesday here. Right?
Original title.
Right here. Well, you know what? Let's call it what it is.
It is what it is, right?
Because when you were on EEI, you know, obviously your role on that station was...
I've got stuff Bill sent me to say.
to talk on. About. Bill sent you your script?
Bill sent me the script. So, we're in section I for the introductory. All right. But go ahead.
Pete, we're thrilled to have you here as a part of our family.
Glad and big fan of yours. And, of course, you, my beloved Friars, I hope they can finish 500 this year.
Don't hold your breath, pal. Hey, should we...
stop that.
No, no, no. Stop, there's none of that going on here. None of that,
come
none on, that going
come
on at all.
On. That's in the past.
The larger question should be, yeah. larger question should be, can the Patriots finish 500 now?
No, stop.
That's where
stop
they are right
it.
Now.
Stop it. You don't believe that, do you?
Based on what we've seen right now, that's what they are. I mean, they are 1-1, Pete.
Okay, it's
week 500.
Week two, right? Did what year is this? What
2010.
It's okay.
2010.
Week two, though, right?
Yes.
Okay, just making sure. Just making sure.
Week it two. Is what it is.
It is what it is.
I realize it's very, very early. Very, very early.
It's very, very early.
But at the same time, you're seeing some disturbing trends.
Yes, you are.
You're seeing some tendencies that, you know, unfortunately we sort of had precursors to that I guess no one really paid attention to, and they were really exposed by Mark Sanchez, of all people.
Well, what do you mean no one paid attention to them?
Darius Butler's not a good defensive back. I don't know that he can be a good defensive back.
Okay, well, I think, remember, a lot of people are saying the same thing about Asante Samuel in year one and year two as well.
Not like Darius Butler.
Well, look, I'm not comparing Butler to, I'm saying I need to see a lot more, I think,
a lot more. Okay, that's fair, but I can guarantee you he comes out this next week, all right? Mm-hmm. And let's say the Bills burn him for one or two.
Well, that's if the Patriots score 35, then who cares? But I mean,
how much do the Bills score? Is it 35-28 or is it 35-14?
Well, we'll see. Last year, opening day, we thought the Patriots were going to kill the Bills, and ended up being they got lucky in the end and overcame a 12-point deficit in the fourth quarter and squeaked that one out. So, and let's they're a 13-point favorite on Sunday. Wow,
that's astounding.
Of course,
for a team that
Buffalo was 13-point underdog last week against Green Bay, as well.
Then you're putting the Patriots on a par with Green Bay? No way.
Well, look, I'm not saying
the oddsmakers must feel like that the Patriots will bounce back strong. Clearly,
yeah,
clearly.
You would think,
but isn't it kind of early in the week to really assess that? And
I'm not a big fan of any double digit spread early in the season,
right? And number two, that's got to come down some if Falk is gone for the year.
Oh, there's no question about it.
That really hurts
in
so many more ways than just his ability to catch balls out of the backfield.
No, you're right. You were talking about, blocking.
Chipping the linebackers.
Leadership, chipping the linebackers. All that stuff comes into play. I mean, I'm not going to say it's devastating, but, man, it's
a big loss.
It's a huge loss.
Well, I'll leave some emails here for you. But
absolutely.
There are a couple of people that are asking already about Brandon Jacobs, and the rumors are that he wants to trade out of New York. Mm-hmm. I mean, do you think if the Patriots could, you know, find a way to pair together a 2 and a 4, let's say? Should they go after a guy like that?
Tell me how dinged up Fred Taylor is. And tell me how, I mean.
Taylor did not appear in the game in the third quarter.
Well, here's the
thing.
And
he apparently was healthy.
Let's put it this way. This Buffalo Bills team, they should be able to run against next week. They should be able to run against them. If they can't do the job against the Buffalo Bills next week running the football, get some semblance of a running game, then I think you might have to explore some other options here. And, you know, but Fred Taylor looked so good in the Cincinnati game, and then I got to believe he was dinged up in that game, and then that's why he didn't come back.
He says he was fine.
Yeah, but they all say they're fine.
Well, they have to.
Yeah.
That's company, you know, you got to toe the company line.
Let me get the Bills. What's it say?
Yeah, what does Bill say?
hang on. It's page 4.
That's under
the Kevin Falk.
That's under Section J, paragraph 17.
4 o'clock tomorrow, we'll have some information for you. I should memorize
that
one.
Yeah, that'll be on tomorrow. Well, we're happy to have you here.
Glad
I know
to
it's going
to
be a fun 2 hours for the
it
listeners.
Is. Yeah.
And I hope that you'll be able, I'm sure you'll be able to develop that rapport with the Patriots fans as we have over the last, 10 years of doing Patriots.com radio. It's these people here, I think you'll learn, are very, very smart.
Absolutely.
And they're very, very passionate about their football team, more so than some of the knuckleheads you're used to talking to.
Well, they are, but you know, a lot of those knuckleheads, react that right after the game, and now you have a couple of days to think about it. So, you know, some thoughtful discourse and some
You have to have emotion. It's part of it.
It is
emotion.
Part of it. I will be. I can't not be. I mean, I'm Italian. What am I not going to be emotional?
That's right.
There's all
but
these
the listeners do get under your skin, right, John?
No,
who, under mine.
Stripper send you that?
He's an. It's my friend, the OU grad.
I was so hoping Texas Tech beat Texas this week when I came in
here. You lie like a dog. he's just trying to go up my,
No, I wouldn't do that.
Well, listen, have a lot of fun.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Welcome once again.
Thank you.
We want all of our listeners to stick around and give Mr. Shepherd your undivided attention for the next 2 hours. Fire off your emails for him at webradio@patriots.com. The Ace Ticket Hotline at 508-543-7482. Open and available for Pete Shepherd. Pete Shepherd Show debuts coming up next here on Patriots.com Radio. We're back here, St. Pat's time, Same Pat's channel, 2 p.m. Eastern Time, manana. Are you gone?